This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It's World AIDS Day. There are thousands of groups in America devoted to AIDS education and activism. The one generally considered to be the first, Gay Men's Health Crisis, was created in the very early days of the epidemic. My guest is the co-founder, Larry Kramer. He later co-founded ACT UP, one of the best-known and most controversial AIDS activist groups. Kramer is also a writer. Before he became an activist and playwright, he was best known for his screen adaptation of D.H. Lawrence's Women in Love. His 1985 play, The Normal Heart, was about the early days of the epidemic. Now his companion play, The Destiny of Me, is running off Broadway. The main character, Ned Weeks, is HIV positive. So, by the way, is Larry Kramer. As the play opens, Weeks is in the hospital, where an experimental HIV therapy will be administered by a top AIDS research doctor who Weeks previously condemned for not moving fast enough and for not fighting against the bureaucracy. The doctor is modeled on Anthony Fauci, the government's top AIDS researcher. Kramer told me he started to empathize with Fauci after Fauci invited Kramer and several other activists into the decision-making process.
He invited us inside, and when you get to know a person, that makes hate harder. He's a genuinely likable person, and I think we grew genuinely fond of each other, so it's kind of hard to call a man that you feel that way about a murderer. I will say I've learned a lesson, and I don't know that I ever want to go inside again, that I feel I'm much more useful as a gadfly, as someone from yelling from the outside. I wish I did not know Tony so well. I wish I did not know Dr. Gallo so well, or the cast of characters that I've come to know and respect.
Well, I wonder if knowing some of the doctors and researchers better than you used to, and having them become more human, more likable to you, if that's given you any second thoughts about some of the tactics of ACT UP, the group that you co-founded.
I have to say no. I don't think that I will defend the tactics of ACT UP and very strenuously. I think that without those tactics, we wouldn't have been invited inside in the first place. We would never have had the opportunity to be listened to or to be taken seriously. We would not have been able to. The best instance is that there's a drug out now called from Bristol Myers called DDI, and they're about to release another one called D4T. And these are both valuable alternatives to AZT, which is a pretty useless drug from Burroughs Wellcome. And those two good drugs from Bristol Myers are out there because of us, literally. We asked to meet with Bristol Myers. I wrote a letter to the president, Richard Gelb, the CEO, and I sent him our usual packet saying all our good things and also about our protests. And he was nervous, but he opened the door and we sat down with the scientists. But again, we couldn't have gotten in the door if Gelb hadn't been frightened of us. And it's the good cop, bad cop routine that I think almost every successful corporation uses at some time or another.
Can you give us a really kind of brief summary of what you've proposed? And what you've proposed basically the equivalent of a Manhattan Project to help find the cause and a cure for AIDS.
That's correct. I go further than that in a way now. The Manhattan Project, I don't know that you could really do a Manhattan Project anymore. That was to discover, to make an atom bomb, and they hadn't even smashed the atom at that point. So it was basically a bunch of people starting with nothing and going into the wilderness. And, of course, we're now 12 years into this plague, and there has been a certain amount of science that's been done, so we're not at the beginning anymore. But what I did call for is the establishment of what I call Joint Chiefs of AIDS, that I didn't think an AIDS czar was enough anymore, one person, and that you had to divide the areas of responsibility into research, and in one column would be research, and that would also include drug development, drug approval, and clinical trials. And in the other column would be everything else, i.e. insurance, health problems, discrimination, legal problems, the social issues, education. That part could, I think, be well tended by an AIDS czar. But the research part had to be divided up into these four areas, and I put forth names for the four areas: Dr. David Baltimore to be in charge of AIDS research, Dr. David Kessler, the current head of the FDA, to be in charge of drug approvals, Dr. Roy Vagelos, who is the CEO at Merck, the most successful drug companies, to be in charge of drug development, and for clinical trials, which is the means of testing all of these drugs to see that they're effective as quickly as possible to test them, in which you need enormous networks around the country and a huge patient population to give the pills or the needle sticks or the IV to. I proposed a man, Admiral James Watkins, who was on the Reagan AIDS Commission. And I must say that this has all gone down quite well. David Baltimore, I guess, has got a little bit of a controversial past, but he's also one of the smartest scientists in the entire world. He's got a Nobel Prize for discovering reverse transcriptase. And everywhere I go, everyone I talk to, when you say, who is the smartest man in this whole area, everyone always says David Baltimore. And when I met David Baltimore, he said he thought that AIDS could be cured. And that is a major statement from a major scientist. Mm-hmm. And indeed, he's the only major scientist who's been willing to go on record as saying it. He also said he would like to be the man to go down in history to discover it. And I like that kind of attitude.
You were very critical of the Reagan and Bush administrations.
Oh, who wasn't?
When it came to AIDS. Yeah. What are your hopes for the Clinton administration?
Well, I have been very depressed for a number of years, and I find myself getting very excited lately, and I'm not a Pollyanna person. I think we're going to have a cure, and I think that if Clinton allows certain things to happen, and if he doesn't, then we're not going to have a cure. What's given me the most hope so far is that the person he has put in charge of the AIDS transition team is a man called Tim Westmoreland, who is the AIDS aide to Representative Henry Waxman from California, who is head of the House Subcommittee on Health. And Westmoreland is, quite frankly, the smartest man in government on AIDS, bar none. He knows what has to be done. He knows how government works. He knows how legislation works. He knows how Congress works. He knows all the leading players. And for the Clinton people to have identified him so quickly, located him, and put him in charge of this, because he's not a well-known name and his name is not in the newspapers all the time, just gives me such excitement and hope that they found the best person. And they said, okay, you're in charge of the transition. Give me your ideas.
If you're just joining us, my guest is activist and playwright Larry Kramer, and his new show, The Destiny of Me, is off-Broadway in New York. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guest is writer and AIDS activist Larry Kramer. His new play is called The Destiny of Me. He's also a co-founder of Gay Men's Health Crisis and ACT UP. You've been diagnosed with HIV. Well, you were first diagnosed with that in 1988. Have you had any symptoms, or is it just testing positive?
Well, I've not had any opportunistic infections. There have been, certain things that have that people with this condition habitually experience, but nothing of any earth-shattering import. I've been very lucky thus far, and I believe I have been infected since easily the late 70s, so I'm what's called a long-term survivor of one sort or another, and I don't know why I'm not dead. And, of course, this is one of the things we've been most anxious to force, to ask the government to study.
How has having HIV affected your sense of priorities as an activist, and your sense of what you as an individual should be devoting your time to?
Well, I would rather answer that by saying it's made me very precious, et cetera, et cetera, and I want to finish my life's work, and which is to write certain things about it. But it has taught me an enormous amount about life and humanity and human beings, and most of what I've learned has not been terribly pleasant. I just have seen humanity at its worst. I have seen bureaucracy at its worst. I've seen bigotry at its worst. And I've seen precious little countervailing charitable acts of love to balance any of that, to the extent the awfulness has been allowed. Yes, of course, there are wonderful people who have been working on the front lines, but for 12 years, two wretched presidents refused in any way to help save lives and allowed other people to intentionally become sick so that they too might die. And that's a very strong indictment. And it's just, I did not start out to be an activist. I did not start out to be indeed political. I was a businessman. I was in the film industry. I was assistant to the presidents of both Columbia and United Artists. I went to Yale. I was on my way to making a great deal of money. I was not a gay man first by any manner of means until I became involved in fighting AIDS and because someone close to me died. And suddenly, I was none of these things. I was no longer the white man from Yale. I was a faggot without a name, and I learned very quickly what black people must feel when they're called niggers and spics for the Hispanics. I mean, I really have learned what bigotry is like up close. It has been a grotesque lesson. This is a country that is so incredibly hateful and racist. And if Bill Clinton can make one tiny bit of a dent in the attitude of that, then perhaps we can begin to pick up the pieces.
Larry, do you remember how you first heard about AIDS, the first signs of it that you saw or read about?
Oh, yes. There were, I guess, several incidents. The first official real quaking in my stomach was in July of 1981 when the first article appeared in the back pages of the New York Times announcing the discovery in gay men of a rare cancer, and it was announced by a doctor whom I knew at NYU. And I rushed up to see him, and he told me what was going on, and I just knew then that, boy, this was just going to be awful. And then as he told me about it and what was happening, my mind went back to incidences over the preceding couple of years where I had had friends who were mysteriously ill, lovers carrying their lovers around literally in their arms from doctor to doctor, from hospital to hospital, begging for, have you heard of anything that this could remotely resemble? It has been 12 years of horror, death after death after death. One does become inured to it in a strange sort of way. I don't feel near the appalling horrors on a basis as I did in those early days.
You feel like you've adjusted to death, and that's probably not a good thing to adjust to.
It certainly isn't.
Have you counted the number of friends that you've lost, or did you just stop counting?
I stopped counting. I used to keep a little book, and I forgot even what year it was when it reached 500, and I just stopped at 500. But you have to remember that having co-founded GMHC and having founded ACT UP and just being so well-known in the community, I probably, you know, I knew more people than your average gay person. But I think by now there isn't anyone in New York who has not certainly had many dozens of people lost.
My guest is AIDS activist and playwright Larry Kramer. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Larry Kramer. He's an AIDS activist. He co-founded Gay Men's Health Crisis and ACT UP. He's also a playwright, and his new play, The Destiny of Me, is now running off-Broadway in New York. I want to get back to your new play, The Destiny of Me.
Good, thank you. I want people to come and see it.
The main character in the play is in the hospital getting an experimental HIV treatment. And but the character, like, whenever he passes a certain hospital, he always thinks, this is where I'm going to die. And he's always thinking about things like the cemetery plot that he's bought and why he bought it there and who else is buried there. Do you think these kinds of thoughts a lot yourself, or is this just the character? And like, what kind of balance do you have with yourself about thinking these kinds of things and just like suppressing it, thinking maybe it's really not useful to think about that? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, how do you handle that yourself?
Well, let me say this about the play, that you're making it sound very depressing and that I hope that it's funny. I hope that there's a lot of humor in it. And it's basically less about the hospital and more about the 50 years of my growing up. It's really about a man's journey to the acceptance of his homosexuality. The theme of the play is sort of, you know, it takes you years and years and years to come to accept yourself, and then the plague comes along and kills you, which I think is the sad story that most gay men now have to face. So it's really about my mother and father and my growing up with my brother. The character that's based on me, in fact, is played by two actors to cover the time span. And the being in the hospital is just an excuse for a place for him to
reflect on the past.
Yeah. And to compare the worthlessness of the treatment that he's taking with the worthlessness of the psychoanalytic treatment that was meant to have cured him of his homosexuality 40 years ago. But to answer your question, I don't think any of us can stop thinking about death, and our lives are completely drowning in it, quite frankly. And one reason I moved to Long Island was to get a certain amount of relief from the stress of being surrounded by so many sick people, having to go to the hospital all the time to visit, seeing every time you go to the doctor, walking into a waiting room filled with cadavers, passing hospitals, knowing who's in there, worried that you're going to be there too. I have writing to finish, and I just need to get that out of my mind. I don't think that no matter how great a state of denial you can place yourself in, you ever completely, as a gay man today, can escape all of these fears, even if you're HIV negative, because are you and for how long, or who among your friends is going to get sick, and you want to have a lover, you know, is your lover going to be healthy, or people you want to have sex with, are they going to be healthy? I mean, you can't ask an entire world to stop having sex. It just isn't realistic. So how do you learn to live with these terrible swords of Damocles over your head? I don't have the answers. I don't know.
Do you know what you'll be writing next? Is there a project you're working on now?
I have so many projects that I don't know that I have time for them all. But I there's nothing like a little pressure anyway, I love working under pressure, so that's been useful. Barbara Streisand is going to be making a movie, hopefully next summer, of The Normal Heart, and I'll be working with her on that and the screenplay of that. And there will be a movie, although it's a little too early to talk about it, of The Destiny of Me, which I'm also very pleased about. And there's going to be a production of The Destiny of Me, a major production of it in London, I believe, and that's going to be exciting. And I've been working for about 10 years on a very, very, very long novel called The American People, which I will write till the day I die. It's like I sort of Proustian, you know, when he finished it, he died. That's, I think, what's going to happen with this book. I feel it's almost my responsibility to write about AIDS stuff and about what it's been like to be gay in this time in history. And fortunately, I'm still healthy, and I feel like I've been given this opportunity to write this story because I was, for whatever reason, put on the front lines of the battlefield when the war started in 1981, and there are not many writers of us who are still alive, and I know where all the bodies are buried, both symbolically and literally, and that I have to somehow, And it's an enormous challenge and an enormous task. I must somehow find a way to make art out of all of this into the best, damn, biggest, greatest novel I have it in me to write. And I'm enjoying that challenge.
Larry, I wish you good luck with your writing.
Thank
and
you.
I wish you good health and good luck with your new play.
Thank you very much, Terry.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
Bye-bye.
Larry Kramer's new play, The Destiny of Me, is running in New York.